Sunday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. The Ducks taking on the Edmonton Oilers tonight, tail end of a back-to-back. The Ducks dropping this one 6-5 in the shootout, but this is not all 6-5 games are born equal, and this one certainly is a testament to that. The Ducks trailing by two in the dying seconds of the game and mounting what was a pretty entertaining comeback. I mean, it sounded like the Honda Center was just going ballistic. And Jake, you were there to witness it all. So let's get into it. First and foremost, I mean, how crazy was it in the Honda Center, you know, when it was tied up?
It was, yeah, it was pretty crazy in there. It was really, really fun, really loud. I mean, it's not huge or very, very surprising that I'd say maybe quarter to half of the people had left, down by 2 minute left. But the people that remained were really, really loud, and it was kind of the loudest I can remember in overtime sounding in a long time in that building. And a lot of times overtimes at Honda Center are kind of really nerve wracking. Kind of people are kind of sitting on their hands, just kind of watching, not really too loud, because kind of the team hasn't shown that they can do anything good in overtimes. So people are more so nervous. Whereas this was kind of the exact opposite, where everyone was kind of like standing up, getting into it. It was really fun. And kind of, it took a minute for everyone to realize that the game tying goal was Raquel's third also, and kind of start throwing their hats on the ice. And sad and happy to say, I had to part ways with one of my favorite hats tonight.
So what kind of hat is it?
It was a Trust and Tradition hat with the Mighty Ducks logo and the wreath around it. And they Wow. do not sell it anymore. And it was near and dear to my heart, but I was forced to throw it over by my loving fiance.
So you were not gonna do it if she hadn't done it.
I was very conflicted, and she kind of pushed me over the edge to throw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tradition. Like, this is the oldest tradition in the game, so you gotta do it.
I feel like I've done gone and messed up, though. I miss it already, Felix. I want it back.
I mean, hey, it's part of the game, it's part of the tradition. We have to honor the traditions that we do have. Anyway, let's get into this game. So 13 seconds into the game, I mean, this would kind of set the tone for the rest of the night. Leon Draisaitl scores his 20th goal of the season off of a nice stretch pass from Mike Camilleri, but the initial play that would lead to Draisaitl's goal was just a horrendous turnover by Ryan Getzlaff in the neutral zone, where essentially he just kind of whips it back to the middle, not really looking. I mean, shades of the drop pass of yesteryear. Draisaitl comes in all alone, tucks it. Five hole on Ryan Miller. Ryan Miller, who, you know, I think faced some very difficult scenarios tonight. I mean, you look at a bunch of these goals, and you know, they're one timers in front, breakaways. But you know, the big kind of narrative going into tonight, and I think still so, looking back, is the decision by Randy Carlyle to play Ryan Miller in both games of the back to back.
Well, yeah, and that's. I mean, there's been studies done kind of showing that a goaltender save percentage drops. I think it's a good 10-20%, something along those lines, when they start in the back, in both ends of the back-to-back. And so when you add in the fact that you have Ryan Miller, who is an older goaltender on top of that, who kind of, as you get older, your recovery time becomes longer and longer. And so it's just a bit strange that they would throw him back out there, especially kind of the workload. It's not as if he only saw like 10-20 shots last night. He saw a fair amount. And so it just really feels like they don't trust Red O'Bara, which is interesting because the only game he played for the team this season, he looked
San Jose.
Yeah. Looks fine and got a shootout win. And I think, not trying to jump too far ahead here, but Miller did not have his best game tonight. And you can look at tonight's game and kind of see like, oh, that's kind of what happens when you play a guy in back-to-back games. And I'm kind of excluding overtime here, but if we purely look at the game, he had an .881 save percentage, negative .09 goal saved above average. So he was basically just on average. And kind of that's a bit of the difference in this game.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm going to give him a slight pass just because I feel I don't want to say it's a pass, but I'm not going to be as tough on him as I might usually be, just because I think that he's just placed in a very difficult situation there that he probably shouldn't be in. Yeah. And then, you know, the shots he faced were some of them. It's like you can't really blame the goalie.
Yeah.
But I'm also a former goalie, so I'm always going to look for a way for it to not be the goalie's fault. Another little subplot going into tonight's game, Antoine Vermette, a healthy scratch. And, you know, with our conversation yesterday about, you know, the possibility of him being traded, I'm correct here. You were a little skeptical on the possibility, but him left out tonight in favor of Derek Grant. Jake, is there like a zoo in your apartment right now?
Yeah. No, it's my fiance deciding to make noises in the background. So.
Oh, she... I thought you have a cat.
No, I do not have a cat.
See, you would go up in my rankings if you had a cat.
No.
But.
Oh, I'll make sure she knows that. I don't want a cat. I want a dog.
But... See, I love cats. Yeah. They're just better.
No, they're useless. Felix, they're useless. What do they do for you? What does a cat do?
See, that's what differentiates dog owners and cat owners. Question right there. I don't need my pet to, like, it's, anyway, well, we don't need to get into this.
To let you know, she just opened the door and heard me saying that and gave me the saddest look in the world.
Cats are great. And what I love about cats especially is that they're self-reliant. I mean, like, you can put a cat out in the street and it will survive. A dog will disintegrate within a week. Whereas cats are survivors, man. They're fighters. So anyway.
So what were we talking about?
I had to make the stand.
No. Okay. Doggos. Well, doggos for the win.
Well, I don't hate dogs, by the way. I just, like, I'm also deathly allergic to them, so that doesn't help.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, yeah, but I do like a well-trained dog. I just think there aren't enough of those out there. So, all right. Anyway, let's get back in this game. So I was trying to cobble together an Antoine Vermette narrative here.
Got it.
Yeah. So Vermette scratch going into tonight, and make of it what you will. I mean, this is the season where guys get left out of games. Yeah. You know, for the potential of being traded, and you know, Vermette has been a frequent scratch lately. And man, like, I don't know. What do you make of it?
I don't know. I still don't see them trading him, really. But, I mean, if we want to get into it kind of as we're going through this game.
A little fuel to the fire.
There's a little bit of a wrinkle going on with the Ducks coming out or going out and signing Chris Kelly.
I mean, yeah, it feels like the writing is kind of on the wall.
Well, so here's the way I see that Chris Kelly.
Oh, by the way, we should frame this Chris Kelly situation. So. It was announced this morning. Was it this morning?
Yeah, something like that. And
Chris Kelly has signed, for those who don't know yet, Chris Kelly has signed a contract with the Ducks.
Has there been anything actually released from the organization saying that?
I know that it's been reportedly.
It's been reported by basically everyone.
Every credible source. Yeah.
So it's going to happen. I just don't know if it's officially official from the organization yet. But it has to be by tomorrow. But kind of jumping into, well, first off, we had mentioned last night that we read the rumor that he was signing with a West Coast team. And so both you and I were thinking maybe the Sharks. And then probably right after we finished recording, Billy Jaffe comes out saying he's hearing that a member from the Canadian national team is signing with the Ducks. And so kind of that plus Billy Jaffe knowing the Boston area and the fact that Kelly was a former Bruin and Jaffe probably knows his agent or something along those lines, it kind of made all sorts of sense that Chris Kelly was going to be signing with the Ducks. But kind of the couple of things that I could maybe see the reasoning for it, if you really squint, because I really don't.
If you're talking about the signing.
Yeah. Talking about signing Chris Kelly. It's just... Maybe they're doing it, first off, if they have an Antoine Vermette trade lined up and they want to have him replace that guy. The other possible option that I've thought about is maybe they want to give Kessler a bit of rest down the stretch and they don't like Antoine Vermette or Derek Grant in that role. And so they feel much more comfortable throwing Chris Kelly in that role for the couple of games. Or maybe they have a Silverberg trade lined up and they expect Chris Kelly to take that shutdown role on the wing. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't think it really makes the team better in any way possible. Chris Kelly was one of the worst worst players on the Senators last year. And yes, that Senators team made the conference final, was one goal away from the cup, but overall they weren't that great of a team. You see what they became this year. And to think that he was not good enough to be on that team this year.
Yeah, I mean, look at it this way. In Chris Kelly's last 173 games, he has 14 goals.
And I think he had two goals and two assists in like 20 games in the AHL this season.
Yeah, and he hasn't had a positive impact on possession in five seasons. And actually, geez, it's been a while.
And this is not a move for the AHL. I've seen that also come out and play.
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
I wouldn't understand that.
Well, and it can't be, because if you think about it like this, if he signed today or signed tomorrow, they would have to put him on waivers and get him into the minors by the end of day tomorrow in order to have him play in the AHL playoffs. And that's not possible to have him go through waivers that quickly. So this is a signing for the NHL team. Like that, it's that simple. Rye Guy Flies High brings up that he was good in the Olympics, or I guess decent. I didn't really watch a whole lot of Team Canada. I don't know if you watched a fair amount more of them. But I don't know if you saw anything from Chris Kelly during the Olympic tournament.
Well, I don't care what I see from Chris Kelly in the Olympics, because if I'm an NHL GM, I'm not making NHL decisions based off a tournament that doesn't have NHL players, the competition doesn't even, like, is it even AHL competition in some of these games? You know, like,
I'd say it's above AHL.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a minor league at best. I mean, they're all minor leaguers in there. So I knew a team was going to like make a move. Well, there's already been two now, because the Bruins have signed Brian Gionta, but Brian Gionta is a little different. I mean, like
I was going to say, who would you rather take, Chris Kelly or Brian Gionta?
Oh, Gionta easily.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, maybe it's just because I watched a fair amount of the Americans in the Olympics, but
does he look washed?
Oh, he looked real bad. He didn't get one single point in the entire tournament and looked awful.
So the Bruins signed him. All right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, so, I don't know. I guess maybe on further thought, it's not really a great, you know, decision I have to make between the two. But I would only say that I knew a team was going to make a decision based off of this, like, infinitesimally small sample against
100%
against, you know, competition that doesn't compare.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to try to refurbish Chris Kelly, and hopefully he turns into a useful roster player. And, like, I guess it's possible. I mean, he was in the NHL last year. And, you know, maybe the rest factor, you know, plays into it this year. I don't know. It's just my big consternation with it is just this is not really a move that addresses particularly anything for the Ducks, in my opinion. Like, what need was even partially addressed by this?
Well, and I think let's put it like this. Is there any player in the current roster that he's an upgrade on? No.
Well, I guess that would depend on your opinion of Derek Grant.
I would actually think Derek Grant's I would take Derek Grant over Chris Kelly.
Yeah, I don't think that's a controversial take. I mean, and I think, you know, like, Derek Grant is at least, you know,
he's serviceable.
Played 8 minutes tonight, by the way. Can I get it here? Yeah, he played 8 minutes and 34 seconds tonight.
I think that's what it comes down to. Where is Chris Kelly an upgrade on in this lineup?
And what is his role? Where do they envision him in the lineup? Like, that's my other kind of question, because, like, you're kind of alluding to here, I don't think he's a shutdown guy. Mm-mm. But maybe if they have a Silverberg trade in the works, then, you know, he can't. I mean, I don't think he can fill that role. And then, is he a fourth liner? Well, your fourth line's pretty set right now. I mean, with, you know, the kind of mishmash of JT Brown, Chris Wagner, Derek Grant, Antoine Vermette. I feel like I'm forgetting someone. But
Data Dog brings up the best place that Chris Kelly is an upgrade, and that's on the bench.
Well, look, we're also kind of maybe overthinking this, just because he's most likely going to be a fourth line guy who won't play that much, you know, because Ducks fourth liners don't really play. I mean, last year, for example, in Ottawa, he played 11 minutes and 56 seconds of ice time a game on average. So he's not a big minute guy anymore. So,
well,
anyway.
And also kind of on that note is maybe they just bring him in to be a depth player. Maybe he only plays a game or two, honestly, down the stretch. At this point, the Ducks do not play again until Friday. So they're probably going to send a bunch of guys down come Monday. And then come Tuesday, there is no longer a roster limit. They don't have to keep it to 23 guys. They can go up to however many they want. They just can only have, and I mentioned this last pod, they're only allowed the 5 non-emergency call-ups.
Right, right. So there's going to be a lot of movement there.
Yeah.
But to me, Chris Kelly he has enough of the name brand, and he has enough of the, like, you know, people will always harken back to the playoffs, you know, where, you know, when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, yep. And he was on that famous fourth line, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Team Canada, there's the cachet there.
Yep.
So I would not rule out the possibility that he plays a non, like, kind of an I wouldn't rule out the possibility that he plays somewhat of a role on this team. I don't think that that's out of the question. And I also think that because of that, I don't think they're signing him to not play, right? Like, you don't go out of your way to just pick a guy up from Team Canada in the worst Olympics ever for men's hockey. If you don't want him to play, at least that's my opinion. And so then to me,
we'll see. I don't know, but
here's the thing. In any case, I think that there's enough like belief in this guy, I think, to where maybe it sets it up for another move. That would be the only thing.
Yeah.
And so I think Vermette could be gone tomorrow. I kind of want to bet on it, but
what do we want to bet on it? What do we want to bet on, Felix?
Let me think about it as the show goes on, because
I really don't know what value Vermette would bring back or what team would really want to trade for him. Maybe.
Well, the Bruins just signed Brian Gionta, and he was held pointless in the AHL Olympics. So
that's true.
Like someone out there will see that 60% face-off number and be like, all right. Like, we want that.
Yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, I feel like we've kind of covered this Chris Kelly.
Yeah, we got Chris Kelly done. So,
yeah, we got Chris Kelly out of the way.
Yeah.
So, do we want to round out this game a little bit?
Yeah, I think kind of the middle of the game was kind of a bit boring first period. I mean, the Ducks came back.
Yeah, the Ducks looked lifeless for just about the entire game until the last few seconds.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it wasn't the best game. It wasn't the worst game either, though. So if we jump in and look at expected goal totals on the night, the Ducks by the end of the second period at 5-on-5 had the lead in expected goals. And then kind of with the big push that they had in the third, they ended up at 58% on the night in expected goals for total at 5-on-5. And so they were getting a good amount of quality chances. And that actually excludes all of the chances at the end of the game when the Ducks had the goalie pulled. So if you were to factor those in, it's kind of a bit higher even. And so it was a bit of a lifeless game, I'll give you that, midway at various points of this game. But I don't think it was a bad game per se by the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at it just on face value, it wasn't a bad game. But to me, it's always a question of what was the opportunity? What was the kind of – what was the broader, you know, context? And you look at this weekend, and you're playing one team in Arizona that is – not trying to win, and you come out, I mean, that, you know, you come out flat, you get shut out. And then, although Antti Raanta has been very good as of late, so I guess there is that. And then you come out against the Oilers, who really have nothing to play for at this point, who should probably be trying to lose every game. And to come out with 1 point out of 4, it's not great.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'll say about tonight's game is that this is one of those where maybe we look back on it and say, that was a big point for the team. Kind of, we haven't touched on this, but the team was down 2 goals with not that much time left. Was it 20 seconds left when the team scored the goal to get within 1 goal to make it 5-4? Is that correct? It was right around 20 seconds, I believe.
Let me see here. So the Ricard Raquel goal, the second one, Ricard Raquel, by the way, his first career hat trick tonight. So That's a little crazy. The goal that would bring it within one would come at 19:39 of the third period.
Yeah.
So 21 seconds left. And then the goal to tie it, Ricardo Kell's 25th goal of the season with 7 seconds left in the game at 19:53. So
we should give a little credit to Derek Grant there, because you and I were kind of joking a little bit that it was interesting that he was out there at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Not the person you'd want.
He didn't even play 10 minutes. And in the most critical moment of the game, he is out there to take a faceoff. And and John Ahlers kind of delivered one of the funnier quotes of the season. He said, you know, the Ducks with something to the effect of, the Ducks are out there for a critical faceoff, 10.7 seconds left of the game, and here's Derek Grant to take the faceoff. And it's like, oh, okay. I don't know. Randy Carlisle sometimes. But hey, I guess I'm the idiot because they scored.
They scored. It was definitely kind of one of the crazier comebacks I've seen in a long, long time.
Game five.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it happened against the Oilers. It was the comeback on Cotella 2.0. Because wasn't that game, I think, was 5-3 also. I actually think that one was 5-2.
Yeah, no, that game was ridiculous. I won't forget that one for a long time.
That was one of the most fun games to watch.
And another thing to mention, and you're going to love this, Corey Perry quietly had 3 assists tonight.
Yeah, he had a good game. And it was interesting because they shuffled around the lines tonight, and it didn't seem to work that well in the second period.
Andre Kasha was on the first line.
Was on the first line. Corey Perry was on the third line. The Kessel line was the same, and the fourth line was the same. And then the third period, they switched up even more. They put Perry back with Getzlaf and Raquel. Then they put JT Brown with Kessler. They put Silverberg with Henrique and Kasha with Derek Grant.
Interesting.
Seems all kinds of interesting. So getting back to kind of the point, though, is this was a very big 1 point for the Ducks to salvage going into the last 30 minutes of the game down 2 goals. Like, that's kind of a big deal. And kind of we talked about this a bit with the Bob Murray comments about maybe recency bias playing a bit into kind of him saying the team was a bit inconsistent. And I think, yes, we can focus on these 2 games. And yes, these are 2 games you want to see them get more points out of. You want to see at least 2 points out of this back-to-back. But if we kind of look at the last, let's just say 6 games, because that's kind of an easy way to look at this, they're 4-1-1. Like, that's really good. And I think in the last 10, they're 6-2-2.
Right.
And so maybe you want to... They have a tendency that we've kind of seen of late where it seems like against the lesser teams, they kind of play down to their competition a bit. And with the better teams, they kind of play up and they get their best game. And it's kind of natural for that to happen. You don't want it to happen because you want them to be consistent every night. But at the end of the regular season, they need to have enough points to make the playoffs. And right now they're on that pace where they're going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing of note tonight that I think bears mentioning, since you brought up Ryan Kessler, you know, playing at times with JT Brown, this is something we've talked about, and I think that people have kind of asked us about on Twitter, is the idea that Ryan Kessler can play as the shutdown guy right now. And you look at tonight, his matchup, you know, it feels like every time they play the Oilers, we're going to get the spiel on how, you know, Ryan Kessler is going to be going head-to-head with Connor McDavid. And you look at it tonight, and, you know, there it is. Ryan Kessler played the majority of his minutes against Connor McDavid and his line.
Yep.
And, you know, outshot attempted, -4.
Yep.
And especially the high danger chance department was really brutal, -3. So, I don't know. Like, this is kind of a bit of a litmus test for Kessler's current ability to play in that role. And it just...
He didn't look good.
He's been struggling, man. Like, I don't know what to make of that line right now, because it's kind of in a tailspin right now.
Yeah, it really has been. I don't know. They didn't look good tonight. It really, I mean, we've talked about this, I feel like, on almost every podcast over the last week, but it's just, they need to give him rest. They really need to sit him down. They need to really reassess the way they're utilizing that line. And if it means breaking it up so that you can make Kessler into the third or fourth line, do that. But as of right now, this team is not better with him playing in that shutdown role. He needs to be playing. I think this team is better with Kessler in the lineup, but those minutes need to come down.
Bob Murray has a solution for you, Jake.
Okay.
And that is Chris Kelly.
I hate you.
Oh, man. Well, look, I mean,
yeah.
To me, the answer here is to roll four lines, you know. But,
100%.
But Randy Carlyle is not the type of coach who will roll four lines. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. The fourth line basically doesn't play. The Kessler line will always match up heavily against the other team's best. You know, the Getzlaff line, they roll them out there, you know, depending on the matchup. And then the third line kind of squeezes in and kind of tries to take advantage of the, you know, some weaker matchups. And, like, I think generally it's worked for this team. But right now you're asking so much of Ryan Kessler over the years. And, you know, now at this point with, you know, the major, you know, surgery that he had, I think you just have to dial it back because he's just not putting up the numbers that we've seen of him in the past. Because look, Ryan Kessler gets a lot of flack on this team, I think among the fan base, partially due to the fact that he makes a ton of money, but he's been great in the role that he's been asked to fulfill in the past, you know, since he's come to Anaheim. And at this point, it looks like he's just not able. And they have to reassess the way that they're going to use him and how that affects the rest of the lineup as well.
Let me ask you this, because I think sometimes things play differently on TV than they do in person. How slow and how off the pace did Kessler look in the overtime? Because they seem to be trying to get him out against the McDavid line in 3-on-3, and it felt like anytime McDavid on the ice, he was doing something dangerous, and it was terrifying.
Well, yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because this allows me to once again jab at you with the Corey Perry fact that he didn't play in overtime.
Why did I do this to myself?
You set yourself up. I love it. I don't even have to do it on my own anymore. But look, look at it this way. Ryan Kessler. Okay, if this is about speed, okay, because that's the argument that, man, I almost swore on the show. If that's the argument that
we've sworn at different points in time.
The argument that everyone always presents for why Corey Perry doesn't play at 3-on-3 is because he's too slow. So you're going to tell me that because he's too slow, he shouldn't play. But at various points, we've seen Derek Grant out there. And tonight we see a guy in Ryan Kessler who's playing on one hip and who's being asked to go out there and shut down Connor McDavid. So if this was about speed, then why is Ryan Kessler out there?
Yep.
So that argument is just like nakedly wrong. And then, so to your question about overtime, you look at, to me, the most glaring play was when Connor McDavid was on a 2-on-1 and was allowed to just stroll right on in. I mean, no, Cam Fowler was left to defend the 2-on-1, and Ryan Kessler was just, he wasn't even in the frame.
Was that the one where Silverberg lost an edge in the neutral zone?
Could have been, yeah.
But
Ryan Kessler was coasting back. He wasn't even putting in any strides to get back. And because if you can apply at least a little backside pressure to McDavid there, you know, you're just hopefully limiting some of his options. And instead, you see Kessler coasting back. And I don't think Kessler's the type of guy to coast in important moments. I just think he's hurting.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And it feels like they're trying to put a square peg into a round hole right now.
Well, they're trying to go 0 to 100 in like 5 seconds, you know? Like, that's what they're trying to do. And
we both just used a bunch of different cliches that both apply.
Yeah, seriously. that could be our new thing, is who doles out the most cliches on the show. I think you would not easily.
I don't think I do that many cliches. I come up with stupid things instead.
I think there's a market for the cliches. Yeah.
I mean, getting into things that we constantly basically go into the ground with. Andre Kasha in the shootout and actually in overtime gets a breakaway, and he couldn't beat the goalie.
I actually think he was nervous.
There was so much hype. I was so excited to be able to bust it out for the game-winning goal.
Well, the thing is, if you look at Andre Kasha in the shootout, so tonight, it's funny, the camera zoomed right in on his face, and he was taking like deep breaths over and over. And I don't know if he was just catching his breath, but it's the shootout, so he's been sitting on the bench.
Yeah, and he was kinda, third shooter.
And he skated in way faster than he typically does. And I don't know if that's the nerves. And then he just kind of lost the puck.
Yeah.
Or I guess Montoya, I think he may have poked it away. But, you know, Montoya threw out the half poke, and that kind of messed with him enough to where he'd lost it. I mean, I feel like that should be the move. Like, for the goaltender, if you know that he's going to do that move every time, just throw out the poke check. I mean, you know exactly what he's going to do. And, I mean, good on Montoya. Who would – and then Connor McDavid would eventually get the shootout winner, the game winner. And that would do it. So that's about the recap for tonight. I got one last note. I will bring up a couple numbers here. Because this is, you know, hashtag Pettersson watch. We should really make that a thing. But if you look at Marcus Pettersson's game tonight, he actually did pretty well, at least from a statistical standpoint. Him and Josh Manson were on the positive side of the ledger in terms of shot attempts, scoring chances.
That's good.
And high danger chances. And I just thought, you know, optically, eye test level, I thought that he looked good. I thought that he made some good plays. And, you know, I saw some people saying he looked bad or whatever, and I'm not really seeing that.
I think tonight I didn't see that at all. I was putting together my weekly rankings, and I was kind of shocked over the span of those three games how bad that pairing was. They were the worst pairing over that three-game span in my rankings in terms of shot attempts, in terms of scoring chances. They gave up the most shot attempts per 60. They really were not good over the last three games, and so it's kind of good that they had a bit of a bounce-back performance.
Yeah, but also the team as a whole has kind of had some weird numbers in the past week, it feels like.
Yeah. Big picture, though, I wanted to kind of bring this up, where the Ducks are in the standing. So with the 1 point tonight in the shootout loss, the Ducks currently sit third in the Pacific with 74 points in 64 games. San Jose has 75 points in 63 games for second. And then the two wild cards, you've got Dallas in the first wild card with 74 points, so tied with the Ducks, but they do have two games in hand. And then Calgary's actually in the second wild card with 73 points in 63 games. And then St. Louis has 72 points in 63 games. LA, 71 points in 62 games. So it's still really, really tight, but the Ducks do have a very small bit of cushion with the Blues. Regulation overtime wins. So if everyone kind of wins out, the Ducks actually, take that back, are not in a playoff spot, but it is still very, very tight, and every point matters, and them getting a point right now matters. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is you and I, before the podcast, were talking about kind of we see Christmas as a good kind of point of demarcation for this team, right?
Well, especially for this team, because that's when they got healthy. So. Yeah.
And so if we look at that, at Christmas is a good spot to start. The Ducks since then are 15-8-4, good for 34 points in 27 games. That is good for ninth in the entire league. And let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, and fifth in the Western Conference. Tied for fifth in the Western Conference with the Flames. The only teams that have been better since then are the Jets, the Predators, the Wild, and the Golden Knights.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they've been playing well. Yeah. And
so
anyone who looks at this objectively has to feel somewhat confident. Yeah.
So, and I think we can transition. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that.
No, actually let's get into the trade deadline.
Yep, let's
because
do it.
For those who don't know, well, actually, by the time you'll be listening to this, so either you're listening tonight, the trade deadline has officially begun, I think, on the East Coast. But
it's past midnight.
Tomorrow is the trade deadline at noon Pacific time. And so if you're listening to this tonight, it's going to be tomorrow. And if you're listening in your car on your way to work, you know, Monday morning, well, happy trade deadline day. Mm-hmm. But there's already been... unfortunately, this happens every year, but there's already been some moves.
It's been less this year than in years past, though, I think.
Yeah, I really just want the league to mandate, like, look, just don't, no trades until trade deadline day.
Yeah, what they really need to do is do what they do with like Christmas time. They put a trade freeze on. You don't let anyone make a trade, and then day of, put everyone in the same room.
Yeah, yeah, and televised. What's cool though, at least for this year, is that for all our American listeners, the trade deadline will actually, for the TSN feed, I think, will be broadcast on ESPN2 and ESPN3. Really? Yeah.
It's usually Sportsnet's feed is broadcasted on NHL Network.
Well, I believe TSN's trade deadline day is the panel. It's going to be on. It's going to be broadcast on ESPN. So.
Which ESPN?
I think it's 2 and 3. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this real quick.
It's ESPN 2 and 3. I'm looking at it right now.
Let me ask you this real quick. Sportsnet or TSN for the trade deadline coverage?
I think I kind of grew up on TSN, so those are kind of my guys. Also, there's some people over at, well, I think for Sportsnet, like, there's the big plus there is that you get Elliot Friedman, who's just totally plugged in.
Yeah.
But then with TSN, you also have the Bob father. So.
But we get great friend of the pod Jeff Merrick with Sportsnet.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, look, I think both are great.
Yeah,
I think that TSN and Sportsnet, you know, they've both been consistently great, but Sportsnet has really ramped it up in recent years. And
that's kind of what
I can't say anything bad about them because they let me on their radio a couple weeks back. So
when I like really started following in depth was kind of right around and like following trade deadline and the TV shows and all that stuff is right around when Sportsnet got the rights. And so kind of all I've known with trade deadline is Sportsnet. And so it's interesting because I've always enjoyed the coverage, but I hear so much negativity about it because it's not TSN. But so I was just curious about that.
Yeah, but let's get into the moves. Let's talk trade deadline. So we've kind of talked ad nauseum, I think, about what the Ducks should do. So let's just give our quick hitting thoughts here on, because we're kind of running up on time a little bit here. So let's give our quick hitting thoughts on what the Ducks need and what we think they'll do. And then we'll kind of talk about the moves that have happened and kind of where we see the landscape going. So give us your quick take here, your Cliff Notes take. What do the Ducks need? What do you think they'll do? And maybe throw out some names in terms of potential targets.
I think what they need is potentially a lower. I think probably a winger and a defenseman will be a good thing for the Ducks to get. I think that it may be too much to ask. I think if we want to prioritize one, a defenseman, to me, and we had this argument last time, that I think a defenseman is probably a higher priority, but a forward could be coming and kind of actually, based on rumors, looks to be in the works. In terms of guys I would like to see, I think a high-priced option would be obviously an Evander Kane or a Max Pacioretty. I think Evander Kane looks more and more likely with some rumors that have come out.
So we should bring up,
yes,
Bob McKenzie tweeted yesterday that essentially, I'm this is not verbatim, this is just I'm paraphrasing, that Anaheim has emerged as a team that is in the running for Evander Kane. So basically.
And kind of they
that is that's the, pretty big news.
Well, and he was wondering if the Rick Nash would trade, which we'll get into a bit, would set the market for that trade. So I think Evander Kane is kind of the high price option. I think if you're looking for a bit of a more value type pickup, for the wing, it would be Thomas Vanek. I don't know if that, I think it was the episode with John actually, when I had looked up his stats on Hockey Reference, and I'm actually really, really surprised at his stats this year. He was very surprising.
Yeah. And he's a good add to any power play. And
yeah.
He can kind of provide some offense in a pinch. I just don't know how much he's changing the Ducks' like fortunes, you know. I don't know how much he moves the needle.
I don't think he moves it that much, but I think it helps. I think.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
The guy has, I think, 40 points this year. Like, I think when I looked at it, I compared him to Patrick Eves last year coming to the Ducks, and they actually had played the same amount of games. And I think actually Thomas Vanek had maybe a little bit less goals than Eves had, but had way more points than Eves had at that point in time, and so. If you look at that, maybe it could work. It's just an interesting comparison.
So you're positing that you want a top six winger or a depth D.
Yes.
And so you've said Kane, You've said Pacioretty. You're saying now Vanek.
The blue line, I mean, the name that I've kind of fawned over would be a Nick Jalmerson. I don't know if he's available.
Well, it sounds like he's not available.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm seeing. The name that I'm seeing who actually is definitely available would be Ian Cole. I actually haven't had a chance to look into his numbers, so I'm curious kind of what he's going to look like on the season. But from what I've heard, he's just very kind of neutral. It's the best way to put it. he's not great. He's not bad. He's very steady. And in comparison to the guys that the Ducks have on that back end, it's an upgrade.
Right. Yeah. But this is kind of the quandary now of adding a defenseman is who gets pushed out, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Because now they've kind of settled in to, I think they might be happy with the current state.
I mean,
but I don't know that.
Yeah. Not quite sure on that one.
So the big thing here, though, and I'm glad you brought this up. So with Bob McKenzie tweeting yesterday, specifically what he said is that the teams who are in on Evander Kane are basically saying that they want to see what the yield – they wanted to see what Rick Nash would get on the market. And, you know, Rick Nash, for those who don't know, traded to the Boston Bruins today. And for an interesting return, I think is the best way to put it, a 2018 first. So that's obviously a bit huge for the Rangers. Ryan Spooner, I think that's a pretty good piece right there, especially for the Rangers. And, you know, a team that's rebuilding. Matt Bolesky and his contract, I'm assuming.
50% retained.
And then Ryan Lindgren on D, so I'm assuming a prospect. And a 2019 seventh round pick. So,
I think that the Rangers retained half of Nash's salary.
Okay. So if we are to use this, if presumably this is the rubric for the Evander Kane trade, you can almost just, you know, fill back in who's the Ryan Spooner for the Ducks? Who's the Matt Bolesky? Who's, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you can kind of do that a little bit.
Well, I think Matt Bolesky is an interesting point because he's more of a guy that's thrown in there as a salary dump for New York to take on. So
the big pieces there are obviously the draft, the first round pick is probably the biggest one, and then I think Spooner is also a key component, and then I think a prospect always helps things. But so are the Ducks willing to give? Do the Ducks have their 2018 first? They do, right?
They do. Yes.
Yes, and then so they're presumably going to have to give up the first round pick. And then a roster player, a younger roster player. Is it an Andre Kasha?
Is it a Jacob Silverberg?
Yeah, but I don't. How old is Spooner? I would have to look that
26, up. 26, and Silverberg is 27.
You really want Silverberg out of town, don't you?
No, I don't. I actually don't want him out of town. I just don't see him on this team long term. The more I think about it.
Right, but the issue would be more, I think, for the Rangers, or sorry, for the Sabres, where would Silverberg fit into their plans, you know, because he's kind of, you know, 27, maybe he's not a guy you want, because I don't really know what the Sabres...
Ryan Spooner's on a one-year deal right now.
Yeah, so I'm just curious where do the Sabres see themselves next season?
Well, I know.
Because I'm assuming they're going to be... This would actually support your argument, is that I think that the Sabres want to make the playoffs next season. I think they tried to make the playoffs this season. If you look at some of the moves they made in the summer, this is not a team that's really rebuilding anymore. They're just terrible. So I think that they're going to go for it again next year. And so a Silverberg, if you kind of think about it, would fit into that philosophy. And then obviously if you can attach a draft pick and a younger guy, I think that gets the deal done.
So Ryan Lindgren was a second round pick by the Bruins back in 2016. So
Marcus Pettersson.
I would think this would take a Marcus Pettersson, a first round pick, and a Silverberg, or if you want to make that a Larson. Well, and here's the other thing is, with them taking on Matt Bolesky and half of his contract, that's a big piece, or made it so that it kind of affects the deal significantly, because that's something that the Bruins or the Rangers are taking on also. So
right, yeah. Yeah, and so I don't know who that would be for the Ducks.
And well, and so, but the other thing is that makes it so the return would be greater. And so if you don't have that Matt Bolesky where you are forcing that team to take on his contract, that lessens the amount that you are going to have to give up.
Yeah, and the Ducks don't have a ton of cap space either, so they can't really be a dump off.
But
or I guess if the numbers were. If they crunch and they work, then yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and so that's kind of my thing is that, yes, we can look at this trade, but it's hard to really do it as an apples for apples because we can't.
Well, it's pretty close, though. It's the same type of player.
Yeah, but the fact that you have that Matt Bolesky retained salary deal coming in, that could be the reason why it's as high as much as it is because that does make a difference because that Bolesky contract is bad. And so the fact that Boston was able to get the New York to take on half of that meant they had to give up a fair amount. Because let me see real quick. I'm just trying to look it up. The Matt Bolesky contract, and it is for two more years after this one, and it was at $3.8 million. So they got Boston to take on half of that.
Right.
That's a big deal for cap teams.
Yeah. Well, I think that Silverberg's contract would help then just to make everything work. So anyway, all right, we're a little yeah. far afield now, but so, I think that if you look at this Rick Nash trade and reportedly this is kind of the rubric, then it may not really be too costly for the Ducks. I don't think giving up a Pettersson or Larson is, you know, like a deal breaker. I think Silverberg, we've talked about it here a lot that, you know, we don't know what his future is with the team. And there's guys in the pipeline that are going to need roster spots. And so he's kind of potentially on the way out. And then obviously Nevander Kane is a huge upgrade over Silverberg. So could happen. Don't be surprised if Silverberg is included in a package deal. So my own take then.
Yeah, go for
on,
it.
So the question that I posed to you, I share your opinion, although I'm becoming less confident that we will see a trade for a defenseman. Although if... let's say Pettersson were to be asked, I don't think they would hesitate to throw him into a deal for Nevander Kane. And then potentially that opens up the possibility for, because I just don't think they want to go back to Bieksa Boschman. So we'll see. But I think the need is there if Pettersson is to be moved. Or even with Pettersson, like I would prefer a lineup where there's no Boschman or Bieksa ever, right?
Agreed.
But I don't think that's where they're going to go. So that's a need I'm identifying, and that's what I think they're going to do. As far as up front, we talked about this on yesterday's show, but I maintain that they should really target an Evander Kane type, you know, a dynamic top line forward to really kind of change the complexion of this offense. And you know, we just talked about it here. It's going to cost something, but I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. And do I think they do it? Well, clearly they're pursuing it. So
yeah, Littergel brings up that Cog said in an interview that he feels he and really anyone is on the table as of this point.
Yeah, I mean, really. So really, who are so? Let's. I think we should probably start rounding this out a little bit. But who on this team is untouchable?
Getzlaff. I mean, so
there's Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler fall more to the unmovable than untouchable.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Getzlaff's untouchable also because of... Right. I think he falls a little bit in between or on both ends of the spectrum. I'd say, obviously, Gibson. I think Rickard Rakell, Hampus Lindholm.
Right, yeah. I think
that's it.
So is that what you think, or is that what you think that they think?
That's what I think. I think they may also have Cam Fowler in that also.
Yeah, I would say that the Ducks definitely see. Although Cam Fowler's been in a lot of trade rumors, though.
But that was pre-contract extension.
That's true. I would say to me that really the only untouchables on this team should be, like you said, Getzlaff, Rakell. On D, I don't know. I don't think there's really a guy. Like, I love Hampus Lindholm, but if I can, depending on what I can get for him, I wouldn't disqualify the possibility.
If he's the cornerstone of a Carlson trade.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Really?
I mean, Erik Karlsson is a lot better than Hampus Lindholm.
Oh, I don't know if I do that if he's the cornerstone of it simply because of contracts and you don't know what you, if but Carlson's going to resign.
Oh, man. I don't. So, a couple things there. Since I guess we're back in Carlson now.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring us back there anyways and all the different rumors that are heating up there.
Oh, man. Well, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. But I think that if Hampus Lindholm is the cornerstone, to me, then if I'm Bob Murray, I'm significantly reducing what I'm throwing in additionally.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's like a huge – like that's hitting the lotto if you're the Senators.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, that would be really tough for me.
Yeah.
That would be really, really tough for me. But I just think Carlson makes you that much better. But it sounds like now, since we're on the Carlson topic, so let's I think we've kind of addressed the Ducks' angle of the deadline. So let's just kind of get now more to a league-wide.
Yep.
It's been reported that the Sharks are in on Carlson.
The Sharks, the Golden Knights, the Predators, and then the other teams that we have left over are Tampa, and was there another one?
Vegas.
I think I said Vegas.
Did you already say Vegas? Okay.
Maybe. But, yeah, and then there was also the rumor the third team may have to come in, and now it's come out that Montreal have been in talks to be that third team.
Right, because they have a ton of salary cap space, and they can just kind of – they can be the team that kind of takes a bad contract to pick up some draft picks. Right now, the Canadiens have 4 second-round picks this year, which is pretty mind-boggling.
That's a lot.
And so I'm wondering, are they going to sit on all those, or are they going to potentially flip them?
Okay, let's do this. Because our next show is going to be after the trade deadline. Is Carlson moved? Yeah.
Yes.
Where to?
Ooh, I think Tampa.
Damn it, I was going to say Tampa. So for fun, I'm going to say he's on the Ducks.
Okay, well, here's a maybe a different question. So I think Tampa is the most likely, but who's your dark horse to get Carlson?
Dark horse would definitely be Vegas, which is terrifying, and I don't want that to happen in any world.
So would you be more would you rather see him on San Jose or Vegas?
I think San Jose.
Because obviously,
I think San Jose because San Jose hasn't impressed me enough, and their forward depth I don't think is good enough. I think that he helps them a lot, but I think that there's still a fair amount of flaws. I think my big issue with Vegas is their back end, and it's just I don't buy into it. I don't think there's that top level talent back there. I think it's a lot of second pairing guys, and if they get Erik Karlsson, that changes a whole lot of things with the way I view that team, and that's kind of terrifying to me.
Yeah, to me, Vegas feels like a dark horse because I think Elliot Friedman has touched on this, but they have an owner who likes to put on a show.
Yeah,
and well, ownership matters. Jeff Merrick brought that up. Yeah, shout out to Jeff, by the way. But like, so look, I mean, ownership matters a ton, and I think the Sharks are in a position. If we're talking about ownership, you know, there's been a lot of drama this year in San Jose regarding season ticket prices, and you know, there's been diminishing attendance, and so you know, Doug Wilson has shown a willingness in the past repeatedly to go out and get the big fish. I mean, Joe Thornton, Brent Burns. And so he's totally willing to do it. I think that there's a need for that franchise to re-energize the fan base a little bit. And Erik Karlsson definitely does that. So I would not rule out the Sharks. And apparently they're also in on Tavares for this summer.
They have a lot of cap space.
And so can you imagine that? Carlson and Tavares ending up in San Jose?
He won't re-sign there. They don't have the cap space to re-sign him if they get Tavares.
If you have the opportunity to have both in your team, I think you make it work. You find a way to make it work. All right, so let's
do a quick hit.
Let's talk about the trades.
I'm going to start with most recent, and there's been a fair amount. So if we want to just give our brief maybe winners and losers, or if we can talk more if –
I'll just go down the list of trades here.
Okay.
So,
go for it.
Mark Letestu to Nashville for a 4th-round pick. Or sorry, is it Mark Letestu to Columbus? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing. So that was actually a 3-way deal. Mark Letestu to Columbus. Nashville gives up Pontus Aberg to Edmonton, and then Nashville gets a 4th-round pick.
Okay. So confusing. Yeah.
Essentially, Letestu went from the Oilers to the Predators. The Predators, and the Oilers got Aberg back. Then the Predators flipped Letestu to Columbus for a 4th-rounder.
Right. And Letestu makes Columbus better. Yep. And everyone gets picks. So everyone's happy. Aberg's a good ad for the Oilers. All right. This is the big one of the day. Well, I guess Nick Nash is the big one. But for me personally, Plekanec. Tomáš Plekanec to the Maple Leafs. Well, Tomáš Plekanec and Kyle Bond for Kirby Reichel, Renat Valiev, and a 2018 second round pick. So I don't really know much about. I think Reichel's a decent prospect. I think that's what I heard. And then Valiev also. So Plekanec goes to the Leafs. Yeah. And it's going to be painful to watch him in that jersey.
I was going to say, and it seems like there's a handshake agreement that Plekanec will go back to Montreal in the summer.
Is that – so who reported that? Because I've heard that. Wow. That's kind of – that's pretty cool. Like, I like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well,
okay. I think it helps the Leafs for sure.
Well, and I think a part of the reason why he's willing to do that is they honor – even though he didn't have a no-trade clause, they honored his want to stay on the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he might not even have to move his family at all. I mean, there's so little time in the season, and if he's coming back – I love it for Montreal. I think that they got exactly what they needed, just draft picks, you know, restock the prospect cupboard. And if they get Plekanec back on a cheaper deal, I still think this is a team that's going to try to make the playoffs next year. So it makes a ton of sense. Also, the big kind of thing that I've heard also about this trade is that they traded him to one of the only teams where he wouldn't hit 1,000 games played this season. So if he re-signs in Montreal, no. So if he re-signs in Montreal, he'll be able to play his 1,000th
game. That's hilarious.
In a Canadiens jersey. Yeah, how about that?
That's interesting.
All right, so now let's move down the list. Rick Nash to the Boston Bruins for a 2018 first round pick. Ryan Spooner, Matt Beleski, Ryan Lindgren, and a 2019 seventh round. So, a bunch of stuff to the Rangers. Good on them. They're rebuilding. They need stuff. But Rick Nash to the Bruins, I mean, this has to elevate them as a contender, right?
I don't know about that. It's interesting because Dom Lashishin tweeted out earlier in the day when this trade happened that actually the Bruins, I think, expected goal model or something like that. Basically, they got worse because of this trade because the flipping of Rick Nash for Ryan Spooner in the lineup actually hurts the team more than it helps them. So that's an interesting little.
I like Ryan Spooner, and they gave up a lot for a guy who's kind of on the other side of it.
Yep.
But
I think they're better with Rick Nash though.
I'm sure the numbers are saying something, but I think you can kind of throw out the numbers right here. I think that the Bruins are a better team with Rick Nash. They were already to me. Pretty clearly, I would say the second or third best team in the Eastern Conference with a chance to make it to the Stanley Cup Final. And
it might be the best going into the playoffs.
Well, we'll see because obviously Tampa Bay
has
another bullet left in its arsenal, and then Pittsburgh has gotten a lot better. So the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be awesome. I mean, I feel like Pittsburgh getting Brassard has probably energized these other contenders. It's kind of like an arms race. And so maybe that motivates Tampa Bay further to get the deal done with Carlson. Brandon Davidson to the Islanders for a third round pick. So clearly the Islanders are trying to make the playoffs. And I like Davidson a lot. I think he's a good player who, for whatever reason, no team seems to value him enough. And he's going to play on the Islanders. They need help on the blue line. And I think that if he gets the minutes, I think that that makes them better and it helps their playoff push.
Yep, and it felt like a lot though to give up a third round pick for Brandon Davidson, but if it helps them.
Pick?
What's up?
I don't know. I don't think a third round pick is that much, but.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know. Well, look, Brandon Davidson's good. People need to know that. Okay, but
you need to scream at the top of your lungs.
I have to let people know. So we're gonna hit two more trades. There's really only two more that are kind of notable.
Yeah.
So Grabner to the Devils for Igor Rykov, who's supposedly a good prospect, and then a 2018 second round pick.
Yep.
I love Grabner. I think he makes them better. I think he fits exactly the style that they're trying to play. Yeah. I know that you, as well as everyone else at Anaheim Calling, is down on Grabner. I don't care. I think this makes the Devils better.
it's not that I don't think Grabner is good. I think he will help that team. I just think in terms of what you had to give up, in order to get him, it was a vast overpayment due to his high shooting percentage.
Yeah, but does he have the most even strength goals this year, or he's like near the top, something like that?
Shooting percentage.
All right, well, I don't want to hear it. Okay. All right, and then this is kind of I think we've already talked about this a little bit, but just to kind of round things out, the Penguins picking up Derek Brassard.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even want to break down.
We jumped into that last pod.
We did, but I'll just reiterate what I said in the last pod. Derek Brassard makes the Penguins better, scarier, and the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be a joy to watch because those three top dogs are just going to – I mean, it's going to be some great hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and there's still a fair amount of names kind of being thrown around. We've got Pacioretty still – not in terms of the Ducks, just league-wide. There's, like we said, with Vanek, there's Carlson. There's a lot still going on. There could be some big names still moved on deadline day.
Yeah. So, okay, prediction time, and then we will get out of here. Do you think the Ducks make a big move tomorrow? And by big, I mean, like, get one of these guys who have been consistently in the rumor mill.
I think they either get Kane or Vanek. I think that's a for sure. One of those two.
Okay. Wow. Man, you're putting me in the spot here. I want to disagree with you or like make another prediction, but I can't think of one.
I took the two good ones. Sorry.
They get Carlson. No, I'm just kidding.
Patrick Maroon.
Oh, God. Oh, wasn't he left out of the lineup today?
Yeah, he was scratched last night and tonight because they want to trade him.
You know, I think I read a little bit more on Patrick Maroon, and he could help this team.
Have you come over to my side?
Well, yeah, I did some homework. Okay. I did some homework. But my prediction, I think the Ducks do make a move. I think that this team wants to make the playoffs and kind of knows it needs a little bit more firepower. I think they do that. I think they pick up a top six winger. I think it's going to be Evander Kane. I don't think they move for a D-man. I think that we're going to see a prospect. On the blue line get moved if it's Kane. So
yeah,
that's my prediction.
Let's add one
anything
more thing
else
to
want to touch on.
How many trades do you think they make? Let's throw out a number.
The Ducks?
Yeah.
I think that there's, man, it's tough because it's going to kind of come down to, you know, the market.
Put a number out there. Throw something out, Felix.
I think let's say two.
I'm going four.
I think two at what? I think two at most.
I wish you could see my smile right now.
Two at most. All right.
I'm going four.
All right. Fine. I mean, go for it. Let's see.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do it for today's pod, guys. We're going to try to get some sleep here before the trade deadline is upon us. Should be a ton of fun. I'm super stoked. I am I'm just hoping I don't get fired at my job tomorrow for being glued to my phone half the day.
Oh, I know. I'm going to be just listening to things all day long.
That's going to be a little rough. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get that because I don't want to miss a trade. You know, like it's the best is when you're on Twitter when the trade breaks.
I've had a meeting during the deadline before in the past, and so it came out and it was the year that they got Jamie McGinn. And so I see that they got Jamie McGinn and I think Brandon Peary, and it was like three different trades happened while I was in this meeting and couldn't check my phone.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was a crazy deadline. All right, guys, but that'll do it for today. Excited for the deadline. We are going to be doing a post-trade deadline recap tomorrow night, so be on the lookout for that.
Yep.
We're going to have you covered, and whether the Ducks do anything or not, we're going to talk about it, and we're going to assess it as we are wont to do. That'll do it for today, though. We will talk to you guys tomorrow night. As always, check us out on the Apple Podcast app. Leave a rating and a review. Subscribe to us if you haven't already. SoundCloud.com/ACPod, Anaheim Calling the Podcast in the SoundCloud mobile app. Subscribe to us there if you're not on the Apple Podcast app, or you can do both if you want. That option is always available. AnaheimCalling.com, at Anaheim Calling on Twitter for all your Ducks content needs. Follow Jake on Twitter at RainierGames91. Weekly rankings are out tomorrow morning. They're going to be, if you're listening to this in the morning, just go to Anaheim Calling on Twitter and there will be a link there. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard, tweeting out the podcast, tweeting during games, and I will definitely be writing something on this trade deadline. So that'll do it for today, guys, and we will catch you at the next pod tomorrow night. See ya.
Bye.